Chapter 11, Responsible Action. Objective, to analyze the link between people and their acts, between ends and means, between causes and effects, as well as the degree of responsibility involved. 11.1, Decisions. We have a number of physiological and psychological mechanisms that come into play when we make a decision, although we are not usually aware of them. Inclinations or passions give our actions a certain orientation, even before we make an actual decision. But we cannot speak of ethical action unless conscience and freedom are involved. Human action can have ethically contradictory motivations because human beings are internally divided. In their heart are good and bad motivations at the same time, with respect to the same action. Their duty, obviously, is to identify with the good motivations and not accept the bad ones. A single action can arise out of countless preconscious, subconscious, unconscious, and even some conscious motivations. The ethical task that people face is to act on those motives that fall under the control of their consciousness. 11.2, Intention. People become ethical by choosing their own goals. It is specifically human to work toward a chosen goal. People's intelligence raises them above the genetic and instinctual level and opens them to the realm of freely chosen goals. Acting in pursuit of a goal characterizes and confers meaning on human action. People need to know what their final intention is, and then seek to attain that intention through their action. There is a twofold problem, that of knowing what you intend to accomplish with this action, and that of realizing where that action will take you, whether you intend it or not. The intention is the end that people consciously pursue when they take a given action. The intention orients actions toward a goal according to a concrete internal plan. Without an intention, there can be no ethical action. This is why the choice of goals is so important, because they are what orient people's actions and lives. The intention comes from the realm of people's values, from their convictions, but above all, from their heart, i.e., from their orientation toward good or evil. Through the intention that they impress on their behavior, people express themselves, make adjustments to themselves, and commit themselves to what they do. The chosen goal is an appropriated goal, and thus, the purpose of the action qualifies the act itself, and more importantly, the person. Intention is a constituent element of the human act, as well as the objective effect of the action and its foreseeable consequences. And yet, intention is not enough to qualify an act. The reason it is not enough lies in the fact that the human act also depends on its object. An overly subjective, individualistic, or spiritualist ethics looks too closely at the intention and disregards the effects, the consequences, and the repercussions. The intention and the purpose in the subject who acts is the most important of the causes, and the ultimate reason for the ethical action. But it is not the only important thing, because what is sought intentionally is something that has its place in reality. The intention must be linked to the natural result of the action. Planting elms to harvest pears is an intention that goes against nature, as is sowing evil and expecting to harvest good. 11.3, the objective effect of action. Good intentions are not enough to qualify a person, because the intention is just one moment, a prerequisite for human action. Good intentions make people better, but in and of themselves they do not make a better reality. Whatever our intention, our actions have their own effect, what we call objective effect. Responsible people consider what the action itself produces and the consequences of that action. It is not enough that my action arises out of a good intention. The result of the action needs to be good as well. Therefore, the realm of reality imposes a limit on the determination of goals and indicates a responsibility. I must consider the consequences of my actions. The ideal situation is when the intention matches the dynamism and the result of the action. The result of the action should orient the intentions, because a good intention does not change the objective result of the action, even though, from an ethical standpoint, people are not held responsible for unintentional consequences. 11.4, Distinction between ends and means. Let us consider an act in which a person chooses certain means to reach an end, or chooses certain ends and not others. If the means are compared with the ends, it can be seen that their quality of means and ends comes from the will, not from reality. Both means and ends are simply possibilities. A door or a stairway is not just a means to go out onto the street. They are that only when I set out to use them as such. In and of themselves, they are neither means nor ends, but for people, they can be both means and ends. Actions by themselves do not have an end. Actions take place and consequences ensue. The sense of purpose is a projection of people's ordering mind. In the animal world, for example, there are causes and effects or consequences, but not ends. Ends require intentions, which are not present in things or in beings without intelligence. Action, even when construed as a means to reach an end, already insinuates ethical action inasmuch as it is assumed by a subject. The action must be objectively and subjectively oriented toward a good end, subjectively by the intention with which it is carried out, and objectively because its natural result should match the subject's intention. Action has in itself an orientation. It produces one or several inevitable effects. The cause is a cause with regard to the effect, and the effect is an effect with regard to the cause. Action is disoriented not only when it does not correspond to a good end, but also when it produces an undesired effect. The morality of action does not depend only on the subject's intention. It is also linked to the objective meaning of reality. An action might have countless effects or consequences. The intention is what gives it an ethical character, not the unexpected consequences. But people, as intelligent beings, must consider the possible unintended consequences. 11.5 Plurality of Ends and the Order of Nature. In things, we discover a certain natural order. Plants do not realize it, but they blossom, produce fruits and seeds, and thereby reproduce. The order of nature is independent of human will, but this order can be oriented in many different ways and is never completely predetermined. Aside from the natural order, things can be ordered according to different purposes. The order that we discover in nature is not opposed to the ends that we might give to animals and things. We can even say that nature expects and presupposes our own purposes. Thus, we observe that what is ordered are things, but our mind is what orders them. The end always presupposes an intention, and thus we cannot speak of an objective end, only of an objective order. And that objective order falls within the purposes that people might have. Ethically, people must consider their reality if they want to discover the order of the means by which they reach the greatest fulfillment. But in the final analysis, reality is not what endows people with purpose. It is the other way around. People endow reality with the purpose that they have chosen. Therefore, people can use things considering not only the obvious ordering, but many other purposes. It follows that the criterion of the objective order is not the only ethical criterion, because things in themselves can serve for what they were originally made for, or many other purposes. From the ethical point of view, it is important to consider the objective order of things so that reality, in itself, reveals its functioning and its requirements. And yet purpose does not express the entire ethical reality. With the criterion of purpose, we run the risk of limiting reality, of making it coincide with obvious consequences that have already been discovered, which we tend to recognize as ends, and we overlook all of those possibilities of reality that can be ordered to other ends. Their task is to humanize the world. For example, a bird's egg is naturally ordered for procreation, but it can also serve to feed other living beings. 11.6 Ethical Character of Means and Ends. Something is constituted as a means with regard to an end, and its ethical condition is a function of that end. If there is no intentionality or purpose, we cannot speak of good or bad means. The mutilation of an arm, for example, can be good if it prevents cancer from spreading. Thus, in order to say that the means are good, they have to be oriented toward a good end. It cannot be said that the ends or the means are good or bad in themselves, because they are mutually relative, and the means cannot be abstracted from the end, nor can the end be abstracted from the means. Ethically speaking, the end and the means form a unit, and they are distinguishable only as an exercise in logic. The principle that states that a good end justifies the choice of immoral means, the end justifies the means, is unacceptable because the means cannot be considered by themselves independently of the end. 11.7 Double Effect. In human life, there are actions that produce a double effect, one good and the other bad. Intentionally, the good effect should always be sought and the bad one tolerated. It is not reasonable to run big risks when the possibilities of the good effect are slim. An action is not good or bad independently of its effects and of the intention with which it is carried out. Ethically, action should be considered in the light of the good and the bad effect. In reality, in the light of all the possible effects. The double effect principle can be useful in some cases, but it is not a universal principle, and it leaves many unresolved many cases that can only be solved with the totality principle, such as, for example, the unjust aggressor, mutilation, birth control, organ transplants, etc. How to assess a double effect action? There are four conditions. A. The action should be good or indifferent. B. The intended end should be good. C. The good effect should not be achieved through the bad one. D. There should be a reason to justify the tolerance of the bad effect. In conflict situations, it is possible and sometimes necessary to choose a lesser evil in order to avoid greater evils. NB. While it is important to distinguish causes from effects and ends from means, it is also important to avoid atomizing the situation and to remember that causes and effects, ends and means, together with the subject's intentionality, all form an ethical whole. 11.8. Consequences of action. Human actions can have numerous consequences, some of them predictable and others unpredictable. From the ethical standpoint, the only consequences that are important are those directly linked to the subject's intention that fall within her conscious capacity. Given their intellectual capacity, people can increase their knowledge of the consequences of their actions and take responsibility for those that can be foreseen and determine their corresponding obligations. It can be a gravely wrong action to leave a campfire unattended in a forest, to burn products that pollute, to do harm to oneself or another person, to impose an unjust and disproportionate punishment, etc. Actions can have consequences or effects that are natural, normal, and ordinary, as well as consequences that are unnatural, extraordinary, and that happen only by accident. These effects cannot be foreseen or surmised, and from an ethical perspective, the subject cannot be held responsible. This is not the case, however, with normal effects and consequences that are foreseeable. Allowing or causing harm is ethically wrong when there is no sufficient reason to justify the risk. All actions are carried out to accomplish something. The objective order of nature is that of being directed by people. Nature in and of itself is not absolutely ordered. People need nature, and nature needs people to survive. People discover the order of nature, but they also impose their own purposes on it, and these are not separate from nature. They bring it to fulfillment. Things are for satisfying the natural order, and for many other things as well. Think of flowers, for example. 11.9 Complexity. Just as there are causes with multiple effects, there are also works that require the convergence of many causes. In the judicial realm, it is customary to distinguish between the intellectual cause or perpetrator of a crime, the one who plans and directs, and the material perpetrators who carry out the other's plan. When the object of an action is good and the people involved appropriate that objective, their cooperation is good. It has an impact on them and makes them more human. But if they contribute to the good without meaning to, without identifying with it, by accident, the action is objectively valuable, but it has no impact on the people or their humanity. The enhancement of a person's human quality requires the participation of the human person as such. With consciousness, freedom, responsibility, solidarity, as long as the objective of the action is good, it is just as despicable to accede to a dishonorable entreaty as to make one. Cicero, De Amicitia. In the complex and pluralistic world in which we live, important actions are less and less individualistic and more collective. The good, in order to become a social objective, needs to be planned, organized, evaluated, and people need to show solidarity, co-responsibility, and perseverance in order to bring it about. There are also evil actions, kidnappings, robberies, social, political, and economic injustices, wars, crooked deals, fraud, etc., that require the concerted participation of many people. We are guilty of complicity when we consciously and freely contribute to an action whose objective is wrong. There are degrees of responsibility and of guilt, depending on the participation, the consciousness, and the freedom of those who participate in it. Neither a job, nor a salary, nor obedience wipes away the co-responsibility for an action when that action is not right, either in itself or in view of its consequences and purposes. The person is still a person when she is expected to obey, or when she receives a salary, or when she has signed a job contract. This is what gives rise to conscientious objection, which means that the person sees a real moral difficulty in participating in a joint action. It is very common in professional practice and in life generally that the problem of complicity receives little attention. In both political and economic life, situations come up that demand a clear ethical stance on our part. Social pressure can be stronger than personal fortitude. The pursuit of negative ends is all the more dangerous when personal responsibility is easily diluted. An accomplice is someone who shares responsibility for something wrong that other people also commit. A drug dealer's accountant, the anesthesiologist for a criminal abortion, the driver of a robber's getaway car, are not only material collaborators if they know what they are contributing to. It is no excuse to sin that we have sinned for a friend, Cicero, De Amicitia. Individualism keeps us from seeing that we often contribute to the evil that others commit, which means that we commit it as well. Plus Christian reflection. The Christian faith provides a horizon of meaning that gives a deeper significance to theory and practice. Christians are called to come up with the best possible means to attain good ends and to think creatively about how to accomplish what they have not yet achieved. They have a clear point of reference in Jesus and also in the conviction that the human person, whatever his situation, must never be a means to achieve an end. The human person must never be the price to attain an objective. People of faith, even when they recognize all of the influences on their action coming from their education, the environment, their own nature, and above all their own history, do not believe in moral determinism. They know that they always have the means to straighten out their life and that they can always count on God's grace for that. They know that in their life and history there is a transcendent element, stronger than they are, that invites them to higher things. A part of Christian faith is the conviction that Jesus Christ is with each and every one of those who believe in him at all times, everywhere, and under any circumstance. Matt 28. For further reflection, causing a moral wrong is not justifiable for any reason. Tolerating a physical, ontic wrong, however, is justifiable when its objective is to attain a superior good. The affirmation that the end does not justify using any kind of means serves to defend the singular and historical human person. Too much emphasis on the end leads to totalitarianism. A. Totalitarianism of pure intentionality, with no grounding in reality. As long as your intention is good, you can do as you please. B. Totalitarianism of technocracy, production, efficiency, effectiveness. But to what purpose? C. Totalitarianism of utopian revolutionary movements. A new society at whose expense? When the end is overvalued, history turns into the hegemony of power, authoritarianism, obsession, absolutism. The morality of the end without a morality of the means constitutes a justification of the power of the strong over the weak. On the other hand, an immoderate consideration of the morality of means tends to be excessively rigid. It leaves out the most personal elements of ethics and becomes a dehumanizing mechanism. It turns into a series of principles that are actually immoral by overlooking the moral subject that is the person. It ceases to be operative because it is essential to accept the historical cost of pursuing good ends. Morality must value the dynamics of the end and its relationship with the means, the nature of actions, consequences, and the imperfection of strategies. Activities, comment on this summary and see if it contains the main points. Every decision brings into play physiological and psychological mechanisms that condition it. People must be determined by those motives that fall under the control of their consciousness. Acting toward a goal characterizes human action and gives it meaning. The intention is the end that people consciously pursue when they carry out an action. People need to consider what the action in itself produces. Actions have natural effects, but not ends, as these correspond to the person. The rightness of an action depends on the intention and the objective result of the action. Means are constituted with regard to an end, and from it they receive their ethical character. Intention and action must be situated in one and the same relationship with the end. Ethically relevant consequences are those linked directly to the subject's intentionality, and that fall within her conscious capacity. True or false? Human action is right when the intention is good because the intention is enough. True. Human action is wrong only when it aims at an evil end. False. Human action is right if in itself it is correct, even though it is carried out with an evil intention or with an evil end, e.g. giving a person presents in order to seduce her. True. False. Neither effectiveness, nor popular approval, nor economic success is a criterion for ethically assessing a specific action. True. False. People can rectify nature in order to assure a good result. True, false. Human action is wrong when it aims at an evil end. True, false. Human action is right if in itself it is correct, even though it is carried out with an evil intention. True, false. The object of an action is completed in its consequences. True, false. Consequences are assessed in the same way as the object of an action, because they and the action make up a whole. True, false. The morality of an action arises from its object, with no need to consider its consequence. True, false. Bibliography, Cela Conde, Camilo, De Iosis y Tiranos, Alianza ed, Madrid, 1985. This work gives an overview of the relationships that exist between biology and morality, the outlines of which were sketched out by Darwinism and that are now being enriched by sociobiology. As a counterpoint, this book is a good complement to A Philosophical Ethics. Denimer Klaus' Introduction to Moral Theology, Verbo Divino, 1994. A clear, well-grounded book, not too long and easy to read. Hortelano Antonio, Moral Responsable Salamanca, Bior. Its integration of the results of sociology with elements of personal morality make this a useful book. Fago de Austin, Erika, Teoría y Aplicaciones, McGraw-Hill, Mexico City, 1980. A practical and very didactic manual. Chapters 2 and 3 on action and 8 on consequences offer a clear examination of some of the key points of the present chapter. López Aspitarte, Eduardo, Fundamentación de la Ética Cristiana e Paulinas, Madrid, 1991. Systematic and very complete work, lucid and open-minded. More Georgi Principia Ethica, UNAM, Mexico City, 1983. This work is considered a modern classic of axiology. The author attempts to give ethics an authentically scientific character. Chapter 5, La Ética en Relación con la Conducta, offers a more in-depth look at the topic of the present chapter. Rodríguez Luño Hel, Evangelio Pampuns, 1884. This book presents the classic arguments of Thomist-inspired ethics. Spyman, Robert, Crítica de las Utopías Políticas, Navarra, NIT. A collection of important essays on the topic of responsible action at both the personal and social levels. Amory Benevolencia, Ed Riabert, 1985. The author presents a summary of his ethical thinking in dialogue with some of the most important currents of contemporary thought, written with rigor and clarity. Questions: what is meant by the motors of decision? All of those physiological and psychological mechanisms that come into play when a decision is made, even though the person does not necessarily identify with them. Can we speak of ethical action without considering intention? No, because it is specifically human to work toward a chosen goal and not just conditioned by one's psychogenetic structure. What is the relationship between intention and the objective effect of an action? The result of an action should orient the intentions, because a good intention does not change the objective result of an action. The ideal situation is when the intention matches the dynamics and the result of the action. Does it make sense to talk about ethical action independently of the human person? No, even though the action in itself has an orientation and produces effects which cannot be overlooked. It is always the action of a particular person. Why can't the criterion of the objective order be the only ethical criterion? Reality is versatile, which means it can exist in multiple ways, and action can also take place in different ways. Ethically speaking, people need to consider their reality if they want to discover the order of the means by which they achieve the greatest fulfillment. Can it be said that means or ends are wrong in themselves? No, because they are mutually relative. The means cannot be abstracted from the end, nor can the ends be abstracted from the means. The ends and the means are an ethical whole and are distinguishable only as an exercise in logic. What are the important consequences from an ethical standpoint? Those that are linked to the subject's intentionality and those that fall under his conscious capacity.